and welcome to Irreverent Testimony, the political podcast by and for millennials and Gen Xer types from a left-winged perspective. Today is Wednesday, February 10th, 2016, and we had our live stream last night of the New Hampshire primaries.
Yes, we did.
And we put that up as a podcast for you guys so you could hear what was that was all about if you weren't watching us in real time, which you should be. But anyway, I'm Travis.
I'm Rachel.
And we're going to try to stay, for the most part, away from the primaries tonight and catch up on everything else that's happening in the world of politics and policy. And there's a lot.
Yeah.
It's just not making the headlines because everything is being consumed by the election. But there's a lot of really important stuff, and Rachel has done a lot of homework here, and she's going to tell you all about it. And so I'm going to kind of just turn it over to here to her. What do we got, Rach?
Okay, so the first thing I really want to talk about is today Loretta Lynch of the Department of Justice announced that she was going to be pursuing a federal civil rights suit against the city of Ferguson in Missouri, which is, of course, famous for the murder of Michael Brown by police officer Darren Wilson, in which that police officer shot unarmed Michael Brown, killed him, and then was not indicted. With, of course, ensuing riots, sort of the beginning of the Black Lives Matter movement, which has been a couple of years now. The Department of Justice has been talking to the city of Ferguson and trying to reach an agreement about how to fix these policing policies after an investigation was done and a really scathing report was released about some of the unconstitutional practices, including some of the civil fines and forfeitures that we've talked about on previous podcasts, but also just sort of rampant racism, systematic institutional racism on behalf of the police department to the citizens of Ferguson.
Really awful, blatant institutional racism. Not
yes.
Even like subtle stuff you can pick
no,
out.
No, yeah.
Just very...
really bad.
Yeah.
Yeah, so they came to somewhat of an agreement in which Ferguson had to agree to do a series of things. I'm just going to list a few of them. These are sort of the biggest ones, the most important ones. The city of Ferguson was going to be forced to hire a monitor, which is someone who is going to literally come into the city, not employed by the police department, and monitor police activity and monitor complaints, that kind of thing. Someone who worked for the Department of Justice. They were required to do diversity training for police. It's a largely black city, and the majority of the police department are not people of color, which
yeah,
is a problem.
Yeah, it's like something like 80 to 90% white, I think.
Yeah, and the city itself is like 80 to 90% black.
Or higher.
Yeah, even. So that's a really big problem when we talk about criminal justice. The best thing you can have is a police department that reflects the population of the city, yeah. Diversity-wise, obviously.
Even your second place GOP guy from last night agrees with that sentiment.
Yes,
even though
Mr.
they may
John
not
Kasich.
Necessarily mm-hmm. practice it, but
exactly.
He says it at least.
So they're going to do other things, which we'll talk about in a minute, in order to increase diversity of the police force. But for those officers who still work there who are white, they also want to increase diversity training and sort of how to deal with black residents and not view them as, you know, animals and savages and some of the language that Darren Wilson used to describe Michael Brown and sort of the different cultural differences and things like that. So that was important. They also required a significant pay increase to officers on the police force. They're not paid very well currently, and they're having a hard time recruiting qualified officers and also officers of color. So there's going to be some different hiring practice there, too, in terms of part of the report said that barrier to entry to the police force was any kind of criminal record. And if you're from Ferguson and you're black, likely you have some kind of criminal record,
yeah.
Even if it's misdemeanors, because they looked
at
before.
That's how they raise money.
Exactly. That's how they raise money. And that's also because of the systemic institutionalized racism of the police department, that their own practices were preventing people of the community of color to become cops. So
it's
this sort of cyclical
which
problem.
Which is no accident.
No, of course not. But the Department of Justice would like to have that fixed. And then they also required that the city install some software and staff to go along with it to analyze records on arrest, records on use of force, and that kind of thing to kind of, again, sort of outside people paid by the city of Ferguson, but not necessarily beholden to like the chief and that kind of thing, to analyze these arrest records and report back to the police department and the Department of Justice on the statistics on how many people of color are we arresting and for what, and what kind of use of force numbers are we talking about,
right.
and what were those cases where it was used, and what were the cases in when it was, you know, fatal use of force.
Basic analytics that every police department should.
Yeah.
And I hope it becomes federal guidelines at some point. But
yes.
Policing is still a very local thing.
It is. It is. And really fractionalized and done in really different ways, depending on, you know, if you're living in a rural place and you mostly are policed by your sheriff's department, or if you live in a really urban place and then it's the chief of police has a lot more power and the sheriff is more county, which goes. It's really decentralized and localized and hard to kind of federally regulate police practices, but it's something that we're looking at doing for sure. So here's how it kind of broke down. They've been in these negotiations for a couple of years, and they estimate the cost of implementing these things at about $3.7 million. The city of Ferguson is broke. They operate at about $2.5 million deficit. So they'd have to increase taxes on the residents in order to implement these programs. So the city council voted, I think a couple of days ago, 6-0 yes on this agreement, but they added 7 amendments to the agreement that basically just choke everything that mattered about it.
Right, right.
So they said, we're not going to increase pay for officers. We're not going to increase diversity of officers. We're not going to do a lot of things. And the kicker, I think, for the Department of Justice was if another entity takes over the Ferguson Police Department, that they would not be beholden to this agreement. And we're looking at you, St. Louis. So Ferguson's already in financial trouble.
Right.
If they have to do this and then they go into further debt and they're not allowed to any longer police their citizens for civil penalties to the degree they have been, they're going to be in even more debt. It's very likely that a neighboring police department, especially in a city the size of St. Louis, would take over their police department and dissolve the Ferguson Police Department, keep all the same people that are there, and then not have to do any of the policies the DOJ wants them to do.
That's their angle.
That's their first move. It's
right.
Exactly what they're going to do. And the DOJ said, no, you're not going to do that, period.
we're slightly smarter than that,
exactly.
Believe it or not. I'm sure these podunk city council folks, like, the light bulb went off in their head and they thought it was a brilliant idea.
Oh my God, we'll just have St. Louis take over. Nothing will change. We don't have to do any of this shit.
Yeah, we're going to show them that Loretta Lynch thinks she's got us. Boy, we'll show her, boy howdy.
Exactly. So Loretta Lynch came out today in a very scathing statement and just said, you know, the people of Ferguson have waited way too long already and they need justice and you guys are fucking around and I'm not doing this anymore. Mm-mm. So
see you in court.
Yep, see you in court.
And they'll lose.
Oh, absolutely. And then they'll be forced to do this.
And pay a bunch of legal fees.
And, well, that's the kicker. They estimate that if they take this to court and take it all the way, it'll cost about $4 million in legal fees. And how much, again, was it to actually... So you either pay $4 million in legal fees, or you pay $3.7 million to make your police force better.
And they'll have sympathy from the state at large.
Yeah.
But, you know... But that's another problem, too. They don't elect the cops, and I don't even think the sheriff necessarily.
Yeah, in this case, it's the police chief, and he's not elected as far as I
know.
As far as I understand,
he's hired.
Yes,
so,
or appointed potentially.
Right.
So it's not a good situation, but it's a really.
Jay Nixon is going to have to try to get involved.
Yeah.
And sort this out.
Yeah, I mean, so after Loretta Lynch announced that she said, "We'll see you in court. We're suing." They came back and said, well, we'd like to sit down with you, and if you think these amendments aren't good, like, we'll keep negotiating. And she hasn't made a comment on whether or not she wants to do that. But
they will maybe to a point talk about some arrangements, but, you know.
And maybe financial assistance from the state or
right,
something like
right,
that.
Right.
But they're not going to back down on
no,
you have to
on
have
the,
diversity training and, like,
yeah,
you have to fix your fucking police
because
department.
Going back, this is here's the thing, and a lot of people don't understand because they haven't followed all the minutiae like we have.
Yeah, I'm obsessed with this, by the way.
Yeah, Darren Wilson was not charged by a grand jury, and we can get into that, the whole grand jury process of
and how incredibly corrupt
into,
it was in this particular case.
Well, how it's just completely flawed to begin with when you're looking into
law
police
enforcement.
Shootings.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Basically, it's an obvious huge conflict of interest wherein the prosecutor is playing defense attorney, and it's just a mess. But
yeah.
That aside, it did launch a Department of Justice investigation, and they found just, I mean, blatant,
rampant,
awful,
yep.
rampant, systemic, horrible human rights violations and injustice against people of color. I mean, it wasn't a couple little subtle things.
No.
I mean, it was ugly.
And it wasn't
it was massive.
Well, in this particular case, you could see how... many, 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 many instances, and the statistics bear it out, overwhelmingly, people of color were treated differently and mistreated and often abused by law enforcement, and also targeted for tickets and civil fines and penalties, which then racked up and then mm-hmm. created misdemeanors and jail time and all kinds of things that ruined people's lives.
You even had some right-wing elements getting in and saying, this has gone too far. I think even the Wall Street Journal had a few editorials.
Yeah, after the report came out, a lot of people, you know, people didn't understand this was going on. And Ferguson's not the only place where this stuff's happening. It's happening in a lot of communities of color, particularly ones where there's a high level of poverty, because they can't raise enough taxes to effectively run the city government. And so they just prey on their citizens with these little piddly, you know, to John Kasich's point the other night, you know, or I think it was Rand Paul, you know, $100 fine for you, white Republicans, isn't maybe a big deal, but for someone
in... Plenty of white liberals, too.
Yeah, exactly, right. In Ferguson... who works for minimum wage, you know, and you get a traffic ticket for $100 and you can't pay it. Then they impound your car. You lose your job. You go to court. There's court fines. There's court fees. You can't pay those. So then you go to jail and then you can't pay your bail, which is now added on top of your court fees, court case, court fines, and
it's
the original ticket. And you have no car and you have no job. So it's a really circular problem and issue that came to light and that the Department of Justice, at least under Obama and Loretta Lynch, is not going to let go. And that makes me really happy. You know, obviously we were devastated that Darren Wilson didn't get indicted, but I'm really heartened to see that at least the Justice Department
something did come out of it,
isn't going to let it go.
And it wasn't just because this happened with Darren Wilson. It was controversial. It was the reaction of the people.
Right. And
of
that's,
Ferguson.
And that's what I think before this report was released was hard for people to understand was,
Why are these people
burning down their own community? Why are they so violent about this one thing? And when you read the report, you realize that this one thing was just an inciting incident. It was just the sort of straw that broke the camel's back, that they don't feel like this is their community anymore.
Right.
You know, when they burn down the Rite Aid, their aunt doesn't own that. It's some big
corporate entity
that, you know, there were stories of young black kids coming in trying to buy a T-shirt for a job interview. And, you know, being followed around the Rite Aid and sort of being discriminated against and getting kicked out. And
yeah, it wasn't like a beacon of community.
No,
whatever.
It's not like the local barbershop got burned down
yeah.
or, you know, the local food co-op. Not that they have that. It's a food desert. So, you know, I think once you read the report and you understand the conditions that these people have been living in and it's sort of a police state. And how horribly they've been discriminated against based
yeah.
on...
Yeah, and us as middle-class white people can't even comprehend that in our own lives, really.
Right,
sure,
right.
Sure, we'll run into some shitty cops now
once
and
in
then,
a while, sure.
But, like...
I'm not going to get murdered,
likely. To them, it's like living in Stalinist Russia.
Yeah.
I mean, no joke.
Or like a third-world country with a... police
dictatorship
who just runs over the people with an iron fist. And
yeah.
that's in the United States of America in fucking Missouri. So I think it was really important that this came out. I think that we need to examine it with our white privilege and with our class privilege.
And find some empathy and understand
Absolutely.
The facts.
And understand the facts and really try to...
And I know I'm not going to reach the hardcore conservatives, but like
yeah.
even other liberals or moderates or people
yeah.
who...
We want peace. Of course we do. They want justice.
Mm-hmm.
They want a revolutionary change
and
in their community.
And if you were in their shoes, you would be throwing Molotov cocktails
too. You'd
want to
burn it down too. Yeah.
Plain and simple. Or go ahead, read the entire Ferguson report, get all the facts, and then if you want to turn around and still tell me that, you know, these people are animals or wrong to protest in this manner or whatever, fine. But don't do that without knowing all the facts.
Yeah, without reading really what happened there. And tell me that if you lived in that situation and environment, and that it was a generational situation. It's not like this started happening 10 years ago.
Yeah.
This has been generational. That your parents have gone through this, that you've gone through this, you watch your kids go through it. It's institutionalized in a way that I... And by that I mean... It's a part of the system. It's not an sort of aberrant thing that happened because there was a bad police chief 5 years ago.
Yeah, it's not that there's a generational problem. There's one Joe Arpaio running around. Right. Doing it. I mean, it's the system.
Yes, it is. And that's why we have the Department of Justice to come in and say, and this is not the first city they've done it to. You know, several times the New Orleans Police Department, which is notoriously corrupt and terrible and awful, have been taken over by the DOJ. Everyone got fired. They hired new people. They retrained them. They did investigations. People got arrested. So that's the purpose of the DOJ in one part. It's not a federal overreach. It is exactly why we have something like the DOJ to keep these kind of communities in check. And these police departments that seemingly function with endless power and work directly with the DA's office and directly with the court systems. It's a small kind of city. So it's, you know, 20 cops, two DAs and three judges, and they're all buddies. And they all are on the same team. And then it's them versus the residents of the community they're supposed to serve.
You find examples where it doesn't just affect people of color, like in Wisconsin, for instance.
Right, exactly. With the sort of, make a murderer. Exactly. So, So anyway, I'm really happy about that. I think it's good. I hope that if they can't find the funds, that they don't overtax the already impoverished people of the city to pay for a better police force. I hope there's some sort of federal financial aid or state program that can help the city pay for it.
There has to be if they're serious about addressing this.
Right. Yeah. But I also think the city does need to address it and, you know, take some ownership and payment of it, whether it be, I don't know what it is, but they need to sort of take ownership of it too. So that's what's going on there.
What else we got, Rach?
Okay. So on a lighter but related note, lighter in that it's going to be light to start and then it's going to get interesting. Super Bowl happened, yeah?
Did it?
You would know.
I didn't hear about
football,
that.
Sports ball, man.
Yeah, I guess it's a big deal here in Denver.
Yes.
And stuff. 2 million people came downtown yesterday.
Yeah.
To say go
there's
sports,
pictures
go sports.
Online of just the sea of orange and blue people in downtown Denver, which is crazy. So we live in Denver suburbs, and the Denver Broncos played the something
we're like,
Cats.
It's like two or three something Cats. Like 2 or 3 miles from the stadium, right? In Lakewood?
Yeah.
It's
really
close.
It's
really
close. Yeah. Yeah. What was it? Panthers?
Carolina Panthers.
Carolina
Panthers. We were heavily favored. North of Charlotte.
Okay, Carolina. All right. They were supposed to win. The Broncos beat them. Everybody's very excited. I don't care much, but I was excited that, you know, it makes the people in our community happy.
I love football, but I just moved here, so, you know, full disclosure, I could basically give a crap about the Broncos, and I find Peyton Manning unctuous for a number of reasons, but whatever. I wasn't rooting against them. I just was very passively watching just because it's football.
And it's a Super Bowl.
Right.
So we watched that, and I missed the halftime show. And then the next day, came to find that, oh my gosh, it's become this very controversial thing. Because I asked you, I said, how was Beyonce? How was it? And you were like, meh, I don't know. It's not a big deal. Like, there's been better ones, right?
I didn't pick up on all that stuff.
Right. So there's been a lot of controversy about this Beyonce video. And normally we don't cover pop culture stuff, but this is not strictly pop culture. This goes back to some race relations since we just were talking about Ferguson. So just before Beyonce's performance at the Super Bowl, I guess the same day or maybe the night before, she released a music video called Formation. And like her or hate her, I don't care. She has been doing some pretty amazing things from a social justice perspective with her immense power and social media prowess and money. And she's pretty tremendous in that way. So this video, Formation, which you should watch, is directly racial in a way that I really appreciate it. It's definitely about Southern blackness and about the sort of difference between that and maybe the sort of more urban populations in the North and Northeast. But so she specifically has, I don't know that the song really is much about social justice or racial issues, but the video certainly imagery-wise is. There's lots of pictures of Katrina and flooding. And in the end, there's this little black kid who's been dancing in a hoodie. And there's a row of cops in front of him in SWAT gear. And at the end, he puts his hands up and they put their hands up. And then it shows this graffiti that says, please stop shooting us. In a Beyonce video, it's pretty tremendous. And then the whole time sort of that shot back to her laying on a New Orleans PD police car that's submerged in water. And at the end of the video, she goes under with the police car and presumably drowns. Okay, so
a lot of powerful imagery.
Pretty great. At the Super Bowl show, she comes out dressed in a Michael Jackson homage sort of outfit, I guess, because it's like some anniversary of something that happened in his life. And she's got all these backup dancers, and they're all dressed as sexy Black Panthers, basically.
Ish.
Yeah. I mean, they had the berets. They had the sort of, like, you know.
Yeah.
But with, like, leotards and the things. So I think most people thought, cool, great, no big deal.
Yeah, it didn't occur to me, but then I'm a dumb suburban white guy.
Well, former New York Mayor Rudy Giuliani had a lot of things to say about
Rudy had a feel.
He had a big feel,
Rudy.
Did a lot of other conservative white dudes.
Mm-hmm.
Giuliani came out and said that she was really wrong to use, quote, the wholesome event, that is the Super Bowl, to, quote, attack police officers.
The wholesome event in a sport that's sending one-third of its players to neurological degenerative brain issues.
Correct. And how many of them have been convicted of domestic violence?
Few. See, they're actually done a better job of rooting that out than
helping
injuries.
These men of color not have brain injuries at 35. Yeah, so wholesome. And then then he said this. He said this is the second of three tremendously white and terrible things he said. He said someone like Beyonce should be encouraging, especially in Black communities. I mean, all communities, obviously, but especially Black communities, respect for police officers.
Oh, my God.
Mm-hmm. And this was my favorite one. When you're dealing with the Super Bowl, you're dealing with Middle America. What does that mean again? Oh, white folks.
White folks.
Oh, white people. White people. Okay. So we shouldn't really be having that angry Black lady saying things about Black people. You're going to disturb the white folks in Middle America during this wholesome event. How dare you? And why don't you all have respect for police?
And then he said he's throwing his hat in the presidential field?
No.
Oh, too bad.
So then he called for, or other people saw that and called for protests of Beyonce, which, like, who gives a fuck?
The million moms made. But I think they're already protesting her anyway.
I'm sure. And
then
she
shakes her butt too much.
You got Bay fans out there that are going to be like, good. So now they're going to do counter protests. And I promise you they're more passionate about her than you are about her thing you don't understand. So that was really interesting, I thought, and kind of great. And I read some articles today because I wanted to get it from a non-white perspective, sort of how Beyonce...
Yeah, we do that kind of thing. Like,
I wanted to hear someone...
We try to get viewpoints from not just people who already look like us and sound like us and think like us and live in those places we live.
And I try to not speak for Black people when I talk about things that affect them.
Mm-hmm.
So I want to read a quote really quick from they called her a blogger in the article where I got it from, which I thought was really offensive because she's actually like a doctorate in African-American studies and a bunch of other things. And she's tremendous.
She happens to have a blog.
Yes, she does. And she wrote specifically sort of...
I have a blog too, and I don't think I'm on par with this lady. And
exactly.
It's like, hey, we're fellow bloggers.
Calling her a blogger is really crazy.
Right.
So she broke down the video in this really, really interesting and really... tremendous way, and we're going to put some notes, a link to this particular entry in the show notes, and I encourage you to all read it. It's academic for sure, kind of goes back to some social justice theory, but I think you can all handle it. So here's the quote that I love the most. Beyonce places her own reckless country Blackness, one of Afros, cornrows, and Negro noses, brown liquor, and brown girls, hot sauce, and of brown boys and Cheddar Bay biscuits, in conversation with and as descended from a broader Southern Blackness that is frequently obscured and unseen in national discourse, save for the as dying, lynched, grotesque, excessive spectacle.
You know, it's funny. I dig on all that, too. Except maybe the brown boys part, because I don't swing that way. But, you know, other than that,
Right, and I think her point was really interesting, that she's really doing this Southern blackness as different from, you know, the sort of Detroit version of, like, hip-hop or whatever. And she talks about having, like, hot sauce in her veins, and she shows some of the Indian parades from Mardi Gras,
right,
which is not Indians, it's actually black people, which is a whole other thing.
right.
And then she sort of, I loved how she said, like, and then she puts that up against the thing that we normally think of with Southern blacks, which is this spectacle of lynched, enslaved, that's what white people see as Southern blacks, right?
Right.
Lynched, enslaved, or Uncle Tom, or some sort of version of grotesqueness. And really that there's entire communities of black people living in the South with an entire cultural heritage and
sure.
identity
Absolutely.
That have nothing to do with how white people or maybe even other black people that
see
don't
them.
Live in the South see them.
Right.
And since she's from the South, she's sort of latching onto this. And anyway, it's tremendous. And I loved the video and I really liked the blog entry. And I think everyone should read it. Even if you're white and you don't know what it means, read it anyway and then read more.
It's not that hard to understand. We're white and we could wrap our heads around it. And we're not the smartest people on earth.
No. Okay. So that's my little get on that. Now we're going to get back to political things that we know lots about. We're going to talk about during Hillary Clinton's concession speech, basically, in New Hampshire, for the first time in the campaign, she mentioned that the Citizens United decision, which is famous for ruining, basically, campaign finance laws.
And one of Bernie Sanders' main talking points.
Main talking points. Comes from a case that had to do with her, the one before the Supreme Court. And we all went, oh, my God, that's right.
Yeah, we forgot.
What? Oh, my God. And
we
so
totally forgot.
Did a little research into it today, and I think we're going to exasperatedly try to explain what happened and why it matters and why the fuck she hasn't been talking about this since day one.
Every single day.
All the time.
Every debate,
every
stump speech.
Stump speech. Every time he brings up Wall Street reform or Citizens United or campaign finance reform or money in politics. He loves that. This should be her thing. She should have been hitting on this for the last year and a half. And it's, I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know what she was saving it for.
No. Okay, so here's the basics in case you guys forgot or didn't know. Back in 2008, this disgusting political group called Citizens United.
Citizens United for Change, I think is their
official...
It's
just called Citizens United.
Oh, now it's just Citizens United.
Yeah, they were started in 1988.
Mm-hmm.
It's run by this guy, David Bossie, Bossie. Anyway, they put out a quote, and I'm using very loose quotes here, documentary, called Hillary the Movie. And it was a straight-up slam hack piece with a bunch of super conservative pundits and Ann Coulter and like just horrible, disgusting garbage people talking about Hillary and talking about how awful she was and all the scandals.
Very obviously transparent, just like a glorified, extended, you know, like smear campaign ad.
Yeah.
But just really obvious, even if you're a partisan.
Mm-hmm. And they plan to play it on cable TV.
I thought it was network TV.
I looked it up. It's cable TV.
Okay.
In January of 08, right before the first primary.
Yeah.
Okay. So she's running against Barack Obama. They've had a pretty raucous campaign, but the first primary hasn't happened yet. And the premise of the film is basically you can't possibly elect Clinton. Here's all the horrible things about her. And instead, sort of, they show Obama saying some bad things about her. And the implication is really that the Republicans thought, clearly, he's easy to beat.
Yeah, yeah.
She's the more formidable opponent.
Yeah.
Don't let her win. So they try to release this thing.
You want to roll one of those clips now? Or?
Yeah. So, well, in a second, actually, because I'm going to get to Sanders in a minute. But, well, here, for example, this is a good one. So when we talk about the way the media talks about Hillary Clinton, instead mm-hmm. of the language they use that they don't use about men. We're going to roll a clip of some people saying some of those words about her back in 2008. You're going to hear the same things coming out of people's mouths now.
It's all going to sound very familiar.
Very, very familiar. So go ahead and roll that.
She's deceitful. She'll make up any story, lie about anything, as long as it serves her purpose of the moment. And the American people are going to catch on to it.
I can't think of any other politician in history who has shown such a disrespect and a contempt for the Constitution and the rule of law as Hillary. And I represented Richard Nixon's best friend, and I knew Richard Nixon. And I'll tell you something, she's no Richard Nixon, she's worse.
Ruthless, vindictive,
venal, sneaky,
ideological, intolerant.
Liar is a good one.
Scares the hell out of me.
So yeah, I mean, it's pretty obvious that, you know, the language hasn't gotten any better in the last 8 years.
Yes, socialism.
Vile, dehumanizing, disgusting women.
Has no respect for the Constitution.
Right. So then, so this documentary is going to be aired right before the primaries.
Scare quotes on around documentary.
Yeah, yeah.
Smear ad.
The Federal Election Commission goes to the district court in the District of Columbia, so basically Washington, D.C., and asks them to put an injunction against this film being shown. Because there used to be this law called the McCain-Feingold Campaign Reform Act, which was the letter of the law of the land in terms of campaign finance for many years. And the FEC said that this documentary violated the McCain-Feingold Act. The district court agreed, blocked the film from being shown, and sent it up to the Supreme Court. This is kind of weird that this story ends in terms of how it affected the 2008 campaign, because the Supreme Court put it on the docket in August of 2008 and didn't hear initial oral arguments until March of 2009. So Obama had already been inaugurated by this point.
Yeah, yeah.
So it never got shown during the campaign season.
No.
The interesting thing was the Supreme Court heard oral arguments on March 24th of 2009, and then we expected a decision.
Mm-hmm.
Instead, they came back and said, we would like the parties to write briefs about larger issues present in the case and re-argue it in September, which is very, very unusual for the Supreme Court.
It's almost unprecedented.
Almost unheard of.
As far as I know. Yes. I'm not a Supreme Court historian by any means, but I have a fairly decent knowledge of when weird or interesting things happen, and I can't think of too many other things like this.
Nope. I've studied a lot of Supreme Court cases, and I don't remember anything like this. But it's not maybe probably unheard of.
Right.
Okay. So they do that. They come back September 9th of 2009, 999. Maybe it's the devil upside down. I don't know. and in a 5-4 decision, they strike down the spending limits in the McCain-Feingold Act as unconstitutional, thereby allowing unlimited campaign contributions to PACs. And, so when we say Citizens United, that's what we're talking about.
And what was their rationale?
But money is speech, so that corporations are people. So money is speech is a separate thing, but corporations are people and money is speech, so therefore people can speak and corporations can give unlimited money to campaigns. Somehow that makes any fucking sense.
Right, because that corporation is now like a one person living entity, speaking, like the Borg, I guess.
Yeah, so we put them in jail then?
That person has, that quote person has quote free speech rights, and if they want to use those free speech rights in the form of billions of dollars to influence an election, then that's okay because First Amendment.
Yep.
If you've never heard of this before and that sounds like the most ridiculous
Being hysterical liberals, I swear to God we're not.
Yeah, like if that sounds to you like the most ridiculous crock of horse shit that is like a rejected script from the West Wing that they never shot because it sounds too ridiculous.
Don't make fun of the West Wing.
That's real life. No. My point was if you had written this for the West Wing in 2004, they probably would have been like, come on, that's stupid.
Even like if you'd written it for House of Cards as a thing Frank wanted to do in his most dastardly thing, you'd be like, nah, that's too crazy. This happened.
That would never happen.
This happened in 2009. And that is why 2010, 2012, 2014, and coming up on 2016, elections have all been heavily influenced by money.
Yeah, and then they used part of that reasoning as precedent for the Hobby Lobby decision, too.
Yeah.
So to make you even more pissed off.
Yeah. So, okay, that's the basics of the case, right? So then you get Bernie.
Then you get Bernie.
And what does he rail about constantly?
Citizens United and money and politics. It's the root of everything.
Everything.
According to him.
Okay.
Which I love me some Bernie, but that's a little
myopic. It's literally the root of all evil for him, right?
Yeah.
So it's all about Hillary Clinton. She has this whole beautiful history of how And by the way, the money behind Citizens United largely comes from Wall Street and sort of big donors of the political right.
Well, now you don't even have to know where it comes from.
Right. And that's exactly what Citizens United also did, is said it can be secret money, which it was in this
because,
case.
Because, quote, free speech.
Yeah.
Quote.
So what is she doing?
This boggles my mind. I want to go back a little bit to some of the political ramifications of this. One, it's really, really interesting. And I remember at the time the controversy about this, and it kind of just sort of slipped from my mind, but I didn't even put two and two together that this was a concerted effort to damage Hillary Clinton so Barack Obama would be the nominee because they figured he was an easy mark. He's a black guy named Hussein Obama, and he's inexperienced. Oh, my God. This guy – I mean, this is going to be easy. Let's get – and they're saying the same exact shit now about Bernie Sanders.
Okay, so the really interesting thing about that – we're going to play the second clip – is that listen to what they said about her in 2008, and I want you to put it in context with what they're saying – What Bernie Sanders is saying about himself now, and what she's saying about herself and all of that. So roll that clip really quick.
My plan does not create a single new government department, agency, or bureaucracy.
That's what God put them on the earth to do, is make promises they can't keep.
I'm going to take $10 billion away from a lot of these industries.
Hillary is really the closest thing we have in America to a European socialist.
Okay, so that's hilarious now, considering, you know, they're like, she's the closest to a European socialist. And Bernie Sanders is like, I'm a democratic socialist, yeah.
Yeah, who hates the Constitution and has no respect for...
It's crazy how much has changed in 8 years, yeah.
Right, no, they literally went back to that documentary and used all those talking points against Obama.
Yeah.
And now they're going to use them against Bernie, but they still seem to... It's like both the Hillary Clinton campaigns... And the Republican establishment, what's left of it, is still in this old mindset. Like, there's no way they're going to elect a black guy named Hussein Obama who was friends with Jeremiah Wright and grew up in Indonesia.
Yeah.
So let's have him. We'll win easily. There's no way they're going to elect a 74-year-old guy from Brooklyn who talks funny and calls himself a socialist and wants universal health care. Let's make him the guy.
Yep.
And we'll destroy Hillary.
Yeah.
Not to mention they hate Hillary.
Yes.
They hate the Clintons.
They do.
And everything else.
Yeah. But I just think it's so interesting that from just a political perspective, the first time she mentioned it was after she tied in the first caucus and lost in the first primary after a year and a half of campaigning. What are you doing? What are you doing?
I don't know. We've talked about this ad nauseum, so I don't want to get too much into it since we're not delving full into the election on this episode.
It just makes me crazy.
Getting in the weeds. But yeah, it's really hard to understand what she was saving that for when she was being bludgeoned by it by Sanders.
Yeah.
Where she could have stepped up and owned it.
Yeah.
And at very least neutralized it as him saying,
yeah,
I'm the one who cares about this. She clearly doesn't.
Yeah. Wall Street loves her and look at, you know, she gets all this money from these PACs and she's like, look, motherfucker, like this all started because of me and they hate me. Okay. Yeah. The other thing I want to talk about before we get off this and take a break is I want to read to you some of the other of the 21 documentaries that Citizens United has put out.
Okay.
ACLU. At War with America. Border War, Battle Over Illegal Immigration.
Mm-hmm.
The Gift of Life.
Oh.
Occupy Unmasked.
Oh, I slam it.
Uh-huh.
See, Occupy that kind of backfired now because now even the right-wingers are talking about reigning in Wall Street, supposedly.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And my personal favorite, and you're going to love this. Fire from the Heartland, : The Awakening of the Conservative Woman.
Oh, I thought you were saying something about Colin Powell.
No, Fire from the Heartland, : The Awakening of the Conservative Woman.
What year did that come from? So is that like a Palin thing?
I don't know. I have to look. I didn't write down the year, but I
Palin's
love that
not
title.
From the Heartland.
Fire from the Heartland, The Awakening of the Conservative Woman. How gross is that?
It's pretty gross.
So they're obviously like super, super right wing, super...
yeah, they're just propaganda.
Religious conservative. Yeah, but their big thing is like giving America back to the people, that white people, I guess. And
but does God. Anybody but like the most loyal Fox people ever actually seen these? I mean, they're not airing anywhere.
Yeah, no. I mean, the
so
only
they
way...
won, so they should be airing. Well, I'm sure they're on Fox News.
No, so we were looking it up, and you can get it on DVD. But like nobody wants to touch it anymore because it's not, nobody cares.
On VHS?
Right.
Laserdisc?
Laserdisc? I don't, yeah. I mean, I don't know. But
all right, we're going to take a quick break, and we got some stuff coming up, including a listener question that we're going to get to.
Yes.
So don't go anywhere. We'll be right back.
Y'all hate us corny with that Illuminati mess. Paparazzi, catch my fly and my cocky fresh. I'm so reckless when I rock my Givenchy dress. I'm so possessive, so I rock his rock necklaces. My daddy Alabama, mama Louisiana. You mix that Negro with that Creole, make a Texas Bama. Sauce in my bag. Swag.
Ooh, yeah, baby. Oh, yeah. Yes. I like that.
Hello and welcome back to Irreverent Testimony. We're going to kick off the second half with a listener question. What do you got for us?
Okay. So one of our listeners, Molly, asked us to give our opinion about what was going on with the Colorado Universal Healthcare law that's going to be on the ballot in Colorado in November of 2016.
It's exciting.
Very, very exciting. So let me just give you a little bit of background. Colorado has a referendum system in which citizens can put initiatives on our ballot if they collect a certain number of signatures, and those signatures are then verified by the Secretary of State.
Something we're going to probably be doing a lot more of going forward.
Yes. That's how we legalize pot. In addition to a number of things, some of which I don't agree with, but whatever. So they needed 98,492 signatures and got 110% of that at 158,831.
That's pretty good.
In order to put on the ballot a proposal for something they call Colorado Care. It's single payer. Is exactly what it is. So Colorado would be the first state in the country to implement single payer. The Secretary of State just announced on Monday that it's officially on the ballot. And under the plan, residents would pick their own health insurance plan, and the Colorado Care program would pay for it. So how that works is there would be a 10% payroll tax increase, which obviously people are going to go crazy about. But think about it for a minute. How much of your annual income do you pay for your health insurance right now if you work, right?
Right.
Likely it's going to be more than 10%.
Yeah.
So it is estimated to save residents of Colorado and the state, like not residents because they'll be paying, but sort of the overall number of dollars that is currently being paid into health insurance for residents versus what would be paid. The estimated savings is about $5 billion.
Yeah. For residents, for people.
Yes, exactly.
So you can bet that the insurance companies are going to lobby very, very hard against
this. Oh, my gosh. Not just insurance lobbies, but also there's been a lot of talk in Colorado. We have a very robust healthcare economy here. There's lots of hospitals, lots of healthcare jobs, lots of that kind of thing. And they're saying this will completely destroy our entire system. Now, that doesn't make sense because it's single payer, yes, but I don't know that they're getting rid of health insurance companies.
No.
It's unclear from what I was reading whether or not you pick your plan under Colorado Cares and they pay for it, or you pick your health insurance plan and the state picks up the bill using payroll taxes.
Yeah, we need to do a little more research to figure that out.
But
we're going to be campaigning for it. We're going to probably be canvassing for it, obviously. Yeah.
I mean, it's a really tremendous thing. And, you know, everyone's like, oh, it's really scary. It's the first state to do it. And we're like, yeah, well, apparently we like to be the first. The state didn't burn down when we legalized pot.
It would save me, just off the top of my head right now, probably 50% of the premiums from what I'm paying.
So exactly.
It would definitely save me, even figuring in that 10%.
Yeah. I mean, I know Dana would save him at least that much. It would be crazy amount. Yeah. So it would be tremendous. And again, you know, if Republicans want to yell and scream about how we should have states' rights and states should be the test cases and autonomous and the federal government shouldn't step in and Obamacare is overreaching, okay, fine. Colorado wants to do single payer. If the federal government's not going to do it, and the Republicans are going to be obstructionist, then the residents of Colorado have a system by which we can say, well, we want it.
Yeah, I I don't think its chances are good, but I'm sure going to canvass for it and vote for it.
Yeah, yeah.
Try to make it happen.
So our opinion, I think, to Molly's question, shout out Molly, is yes, yay, hooray, yay, wonderful.
And we'll give you more details on it as we gather
them.
Yeah,
exactly.
With my connections in the healthcare industry here, I can probably get some more possible inside info here.
Great.
And I'll try.
Yeah. So we love it, Molly. We think everyone should be for it, should vote for it.
My
only question and concern is that under the text of the law, it says it covers anyone in Colorado who earns income and lives here.
Mm-hmm.
I'm guessing that that's because we have an expansion of Medicaid in
right,
the state.
Right. If you don't earn income, you get Medicaid.
You get Medicaid.
Yeah,
so
you would need to be on that
yeah.
system.
So it's not that it's not going to cover everybody. It's going to cover everybody who works in a single payer system, which is the same thing that Medicaid is. It's a single payer system. It's just this would be a separate.
So it is kind of European
payer.
Style. You pay a higher tax
yes.
out of your payroll.
Yep.
And you get universal health care.
Correct.
And everybody really, really loves it. I don't want to say everybody, but it's like 85 to 90%.
Yeah.
Where the Republicans are always telling you it's a horror show and everybody hates it.
Yeah.
Wrong.
Right. No,
not true.
Have
you ever met anybody from the UK?
Yeah, they think we're absolutely crazy. Yeah, exactly.
Ask them.
Canada. Yeah.
Norway.
Yeah.
Sweden. Ask them how much they, quote, hate it.
Yeah.
They don't.
It's tremendous.
Yeah.
So that's our answer to that. And we'll get more information as we find it out. We wanted to answer that question while we had a minute. Okay, next. We have a little update, a kind of breaking news update, actually, on the Oregon wildlife refugee.
And then there were four.
Yeah.
Four followers left. They're at this hour, as far as we understand, surrounded by FBI agents who are trying to get them to voluntarily give up and not go out in a blaze of glory to spite Obama, which is really at the core of what this is all about, I think.
Yeah.
Federal government, yeah. something overreach.
Sovereign citizens, blah, blah, blah.
Well, right. But they're what they claim to be doing this for is that they don't like the fact that these two ranchers were convicted and are now serving sentences for arson on federal land. And the two guys that were convicted have basically said, yeah, we're doing our time and we want nothing to do with these people.
Right.
So they're using that as an excuse.
Well, they're basically, that's basically it. But they served some time, but it wasn't enough because the judge
well,
who
right.
sentenced them.
Well, right, it's a
little
more complicated. Now they're going back
yeah.
voluntarily.
Yeah, they
they're
had to go back because they
anymore.
Weren't sentenced to the mandatory minimum. So they right. have to go back for like 18 months or something. And they're like, it's fine, leave us alone. And the Bundys being the Bundys and
so
they're
no, it's not fine.
Stupid
we're,
supporters.
We're going to be martyrs for you. And they've have said, we have nothing to do with these people.
Yeah.
They don't support us. They don't speak for us. We don't support them.
Yeah.
Whatever.
And then, so then once the first round got arrested, the rest of the people left said, well, we have new leadership now, and we have a new direction, and we have new goals, and we're not ever going to give this back to the federal government, ever. And there's four of them, so I think it's unlikely they'll hold it.
Well, those birders,
indefinitely.
Man, if the FBI didn't move in, the birders would.
Right?
Just ask our friend Melly.
Right? Those Shout
birders,
out Melly.
Those birders do not F around.
They do not.
And they've had
it's
enough,
serious business.
And they want their sanctuary back, especially with the weather getting nicer now.
Yeah.
They're not going to stand for this foolishness.
Exactly. And I guess some jackass was driving around the compound near the barracks where
to go
the,
get snacks, probably.
The FBI had has their barracks and has had them for weeks, which caused an escalation. And so there's no shots fired. They're still just trying to talk. Negotiations are underway.
They'll probably turn off the power, freeze them out, starve them out, give them a couple days.
Yeah.
Probably, I guess. I hope that these jokers inside don't start firing or that the FBI doesn't start firing.
Me too. I doubt it.
There is one
point.
Fatality already from this.
Yes.
It was Linscomb, what was the guy's name?
Oh, God. Finicum.
Finicum.
Finicum. Leroy
Finicum.
I don't remember.
Yeah.
So the four people still left inside are David Fry, Jeff Banta, and Sean and Sandy Anderson.
Now, I thought David Fry was the dildo and gummy dicks guy.
I don't know which one it was, but it's very possible.
I thought
that
might be him.
Very possible.
So, kudos to him. I like to think that, shout out Katie, that those gummy dicks were what said.
And real life dildos, too. That got
and real life dildos are what, maybe he was going to give up, but like that just enraged him so much that he's going to literally possibly die on that hill.
Yeah.
Because how dare you send me
how
gummy
dare
dicks.
The people. Yeah. And there was also a protest I heard about the other day outside the courthouse because 16 people were put under federal jury indictment and the federal jury decided to go ahead and charge them with conspiracy to impede federal officers. And when they came out of that federal jury hearing, apparently a lot of the people in the surrounding town were out there protesting. The people not protesting them being arrested, but protesting them being there at all, and shouting, "Go home, get the hell out of our city."
Yes.
And I heard this woman on NPR who was one of the indicted or charged people. And she said, "Well, gosh, I was really surprised. We've always heard that all the people were really supportive of us." And then she goes, "Of course, there's no way for me to know they're not paid actors. There's no way for me to know that Obama didn't send them down here and tell them what to do, that they're not government agents." So
she's from Minnesota.
Yeah, I don't know. That's my accent for her. So even when faced with mass protests from locals,
they're like, "Well, I'm sure she listens to right wing radio and Fox News and the people inside." So of course she thinks.
Of course,
everybody.
It's like when you go to like crazy places in the Middle East and they're like, "Oh, America sent this person in to." That's why. It's just nonsense. They can't believe anyone would ever be against them because they're. Causes the greatest,
so
or blah, gross. Anyway, so that's what's going on there. I think it'll end peacefully.
I hope so.
Yeah.
I hope you're right.
I think it will. I don't know, but I would assume.
And then the question will be, what was accomplished?
Right, nothing. Just a bunch of people got arrested and charged.
And one guy got killed.
Pissed off the birders. And one guy lost his life. And those and two those other guys are still in jail.
Still in jail.
Federal government still owns that property. They didn't get to have a big standoff. Yeah, big ol' nothing for them.
Maybe, or you put together a real grassroots movement and you try to get legislation started in Congress to change some of the domain laws and cattle grazing fees structure and all the stuff that they're really, the ranchers at least, are pissed. Because it's not just ranchers, it's a hodgepodge of hate federal government types.
I don't see that ever really.
No, well, that supposedly is
getting
the core
any traction, though. I mean,
I could if
why
you have, if you have enough congressmen behind it.
I hope, but nobody cares.
Well, the ranchers care. I mean, some people, some even moderate type, maybe liberal types, have said, you know, if you dig down to the core of this, at least where some of the ranchers are concerned, not the Bundys because they're nuts, but. Where some of the other ranchers are concerned is, you know, there is something to be looked at with some of the fees and the land that the federal government places, and it constricts the ranchers. But I mean, fine.
It doesn't constrict them. It just makes you pay for use, land use, and most of them pay it. And if they're upset about that, then that's fine. But I don't, I mean, that's a very small portion of the population that
But my point is, like, you go about this through normal political action. You don't.
Yeah.
Commandeer a bird sanctuary.
No, because look where that got you.
Put up your snake flag and say send snacks. And...
Right. Yeah.
So that was my point about that.
Yeah. Agreed. There's a proper way to go about things.
What else we got?
All right. Well, this is super depressing. So one of the shootings of an unarmed black...
child in this
child,
case.
I'm not even going to say man. He was 12. His name was Tamir Rice in Cleveland back in November of 2014. One of the most egregious, in part because it was caught on video of the police officer driving in at about 40 miles an hour, slamming on his brakes. There's this little kid with a fake, like a BB gun in a park.
I don't even think it was a BB gun. I think it was like
a toy, some kind of toy gun.
Like dollar store fake gun.
Standing there looking like he's just standing there, and this cop literally runs out of the car and shoots him at point blank range within, I think the report was within 2 seconds.
Yeah.
Cop claims, no, I told him to get down. He didn't listen. Like, he didn't have enough time to even speak a single sentence.
No, the kid like, clearly doesn't know what the hell is going on.
Yeah.
Probably
he's
didn't
out
even think it had anything to do with him.
In a park. And then
may
later
have thought
evidence.
The cop was chasing somebody behind him or something.
Yeah. Later evidence showed that the person who called him in, Tamir Rice, this child, even said, like, "I think it might be a toy gun. Don't overreact. I just want somebody to check it out."
Yeah.
Good luck with that. The city failed to.
Oh, the way it gets worse because the cop had serious psychiatric problems.
Yeah.
And had this.
Yeah.
He'd
been transferred over from another department, I think.
Or fired from another department and then went on with Cuyahoga County.
Yeah.
Because there was a scathing dismissal letter said this guy should not be a cop. He's not responsible.
Doesn't have like
the
temperament for
the temperament. He has serious psychiatric problems that he needs addressed.
And I think he's a Cleveland PD, right? Not county sheriff. But anyway, doesn't matter.
I'm not sure.
So the city of Cleveland didn't even charge him with anything. They did a whole thing and
No,
with all the overwhelming evidence,
another grand jury ends in nothing.
Yep.
And their excuses were really horrible, that he looked big for his age and all this
couldn't
other stuff.
Couldn't tell it was a fake gun, but they didn't even give the kid a chance.
Right.
It was really horrific. So the family has an attorney, and they're suing, and they should, and I hope they win a bunch of money.
But because the city of Cleveland has the best PR department in the world.
Yeah. The family of Tamir Rice received a creditor's claim, which is a bill that has gone to collections, by the way, for $500 from the city of Cleveland, saying that the family failed to pay for the ambulance and paramedics that tended to the 12-year-old child after he was shot by police. They would like to charge him $450 for advanced life support and $50 for the mileage driven by the ambulance to the hospital where Tamir Rice later died.
Was pronounced dead. He's probably dead at the scene.
Yeah.
So, if you're following this, Tamir Rice's family got a bill for his murder.
Correct. $500. Please. We will take it. Thank you.
Now, if they have even any semblance of PR or legal counsel, this will get wiped out. But the fact that this went ahead and got the city stamp and nobody caught it, and now it's national news, is beyond mind-boggling.
Oh, it is. So, the family's attorney released a statement that I thought was pretty scathing. Quote, that the city would submit a bill and call itself a creditor after having had its own police officers slay 12-year-old Tamir displays a new pinnacle of callousness and insensitivity. The kind of poor judgment that it takes to do such a thing is nothing short of breathtaking. Who on earth would think this was a good idea and file this on behalf of the city? This adds insult to homicide. The mayor and law director should apologize to the Rice family and withdraw this filing immediately.
Which they probably will, but this isn't
what
unprecedented.
What the fuck kind of thing is that to do, though?
It's not unprecedented either. I've read similar stories.
I mean,
victims of police. Isn't there a lawsuit going on now in Chicago? There was a guy who answered a domestic disturbance call, shot one of the unarmed people he was sort of there to investigate, and a neighbor who was just kind of watching. And then he got sued, and now he's countersuing the family.
I don't know about that. I know that there was a guy who, a deputy sheriff was coming to evict him from his house, and the guy had a shotgun, and the cop shot him, and it shot through his arm and murdered his daughter, and the person whose daughter it was charged with her murder because he had a gun pointed at law enforcement. And they said that had he not had that gun, the law enforcement officer would never have shot, and his daughter wouldn't be dead. So he has a dead daughter, and he's being charged with murder.
That's a little trickier.
Yep.
But, yeah. But what I was going to say was unprecedented is families being charged with these costs from the city or municipality in police controversial police-involved shootings.
Well, it just if it's this much in the media.
It's nuts.
Somebody didn't catch it.
You would think.
It's crazy.
Or maybe they're just going to go ahead with it. And I hope Mr. New Super Moderate John Kasich gets asked this on the campaign trail
Me
by
too.
Somebody.
Yeah.
Because
Mr. Number 2 in New Hampshire.
Right. He masquerades as this super moderate, bring everybody together, kumbaya guy. He's not a moderate. I'm working on a story actually for Daily Kos about this guy's stance on reproductive rights, on voter ID,
yep,
on a whole bunch of other stuff. He ain't no moderate.
Right.
He can claim that mantle and call himself that because he's on stage with a bunch of crazies.
Yep.
But in real life, no chance. So I hope they ask him, and I hope we'll see what he has to say, and
we'll
go from there. So what else we got, Rach?
That's all I have at the moment in terms of like kind of news stuff in the news. Obviously, if you just want a really quick rundown, because we can't help ourselves, Chris Christie and Carly Fiorina dropped out today. Fiorina, excuse me.
Oh, let me add something to that, right?
Oh.
Ted Cruz aside, and I know the others have touched on it, at least early on, I know Rubio and Bush and everybody jumped on that bandwagon, but the two most vocal, vociferous people peddling the whole Planned Parenthood sells body parts thing were Christie and Fiorina.
Carly Fiorina.
And that got them a lot of press and a lot of adulation from the right wing for a hot minute, but
Did it get them votes? Doesn't look like
voters
it.
Voters didn't seem to care.
Nope.
So
maybe they should knock that off.
Maybe. It's just something to keep in mind.
Yeah. So they're both out. Eric Holder, who is the former
Attorney General.
Sorry, I was like leader of Department of Justice. Attorney General endorsed Hillary Clinton in an ad today, which,
as is his right as a private citizen.
Absolutely. I was a little surprised by, but actually not really, because I think they worked pretty closely together.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
I love Eric Holder. Bernie Sanders flew to New York City to meet with Al Sharpton ahead of South Carolina. There's lots to talk about race for obvious reasons. And then Al Sharpton was on Chris Hayes talking about that a little bit. We were discussing earlier, we wanted to get into
Sharpton
looking.
Sharpton didn't show his cards. He was
He didn't endorse anyone. I don't think he's actually allowed to because he works for MSNBC and has his own politics show.
He's meeting with Hillary, I think, tomorrow or soon.
Too. And like they've known each other for years and years. So. But anyway,
he's known Bernie for years too.
Yeah. And then Jim Webb, if you guys even remember who that is. The Republican nobody.
No,
Democratic nobody. It's hard to keep him. Yeah, right. He's nothing. He's running as an independent, maybe.
With what
with
money?
$5. Yeah.
But yeah, so hold on. You know, brace yourselves for that earth-shaking turn of events. And Michael Bloomberg may run.
Oh yeah.
There's some people that he say they are. No, they're assuming he'd run as independent, but a lot of people think he might as well just run as a Republican. I've got a lot of questions about this Bloomberg running thing. First of all, it's late in the game here.
Yeah.
Delegates are already being awarded.
Yeah. Not very many.
If he jumped in before Super Tuesday, but then he's got to go through the process of getting his name on the ballot everywhere. Is that even doable, feasible at this point? Don't you have to get a certain number of signatures in each state and
yes.
go through the entire process?
Yes.
Nobody's
but
talking
about
the logistics.
Think about how many states vote in June. All the big ones. California, New York, like Connecticut. All the big, big ones
Without
vote in June.
Without the Super Tuesday states, you could still, if you just run the table everywhere. I mean, you'd have to crush it everywhere else.
But if he's an independent, he doesn't need
those
delegates.
Oh, no, he doesn't need his delegates.
He doesn't need any delegates. So he can't run as a Republican, but if he's an independent, who cares? He's just running in the general.
You're right.
Yeah.
He doesn't need delegates.
Nope. Okay. So. That he can't run as a Republican unless he wants to try to take it over.
Here's the thing, though. He's going to get on stage. Let's say it's Bernie, Trump, and Bloomberg, which some polls now that there's hardly any name recognition shows like a three-way tie.
Yeah.
If that were to happen. But Bloomberg's going to get up on stage, and here's a billionaire talking about tax cuts for billionaires, and Bloomberg's going to say the same thing.
Yep.
So...
Then you're going to have
Bernie
really being like, no.
Is he really going to split or take Bernie votes? I mean, like, Bloomberg is...
Only...
He's more progressive on, like, you know, talking about... He's not as harsh talking about Muslims and better on reproductive rights.
He was the mayor of New York City.
Yeah, on gay rights.
Yes.
So he's a little more to the
left
on
certain
things.
But then how is he going to get the Republicans to vote for him? If he's...
He's just another rich guy who's not nearly as funny or charismatic as Trump.
Right.
So he might take a few from a Sanders or a Clinton, but...
But we think that if he were to run, he'd likely take a chunk out of the middle. Take some from Bernie, take some from Trump.
Like Perot?
Yeah.
Take it evenly?
Yeah. No, it doesn't make a difference.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know. I'm dubious that he would actually get in at this late date. And I think he said he'll get in if it's Trump v. Sanders. Which, just because they won the primaries in New Hampshire last night, everybody's assuming it's over. It's going to be those two. We had a long way to go. But,
yeah.
I don't know. It just seems kind of weird. I mean, and Bloomberg is reviled by the right.
Yeah.
He's very staunchly pro-gun control.
Pro-gun control. He's pro kind of social engineering in a way in New York City that really pissed people off.
The sodas.
You're not allowed to have a certain, like, over 24
ounces.
Fox
was almost as mad
of...
about sodas as anything.
I mean, so is Jon Stewart. Like, he's kind of reviled by both sides. You know what I mean?
He's got enemies on both sides. But
the
he's
sodas,
got
the
some
cigarettes,
friends, too.
The different. Well, he's got a. They said he's like 10 times more wealthy than Donald Trump.
Yeah, oh, you know, he's a multi billionaire.
Yeah, so
and
he's got money.
And this is not the election season that jibes with the good sort of the population, at least in the middle and the left. I mean, like, so where's Bloomberg going to garner those votes? Another really, really rich guy who's all about Wall Street. And
that's where he made all his money,
all about tax cuts for the rich. And all about, you know, all this stuff. I mean, like,
I don't
really?
See it.
He's
going to
take a bunch
it.
Of votes from Bernie?
Nah.
I mean, I don't know. We'll see. I don't know. I don't know if he's actually going to get in. But Jim Webb is, so look out. Look out.
Independent
now.
Candidate Jim Webb, who I forgot was a Democrat.
Jim Webb is going to have a press conference, and he's going to complain about how few questions he's getting.
Complain to the one reporter that shows up why there's no more reporters there?
Yeah. Okay, I'm not going to go down the rabbit hole that is talking about the primaries, because we got plenty more of that to come.
Okay.
Is that going to about do it?
That's it.
Okay, that's about going to wrap it up. Again, send your hate mail to irreverenttestimony@gmail.com. Please check out our live stream channel on YouTube. We're going to be live streaming probably the Nevada Democrat/South Carolina Republican on the 20th, mm-hmm. probably, maybe.
Caucus slash primary. It's one of each.
Depends.
We're going to try, depending on scheduling and stuff.
We're going to try, so please try to check that out. And
follow us at Irreverent Duo at Twitter. And
we're on Facebook, too.
We're on Facebook, yeah. If you have questions, testimony. Comments.
Questions, comments, bribes.
Anything you want, let us know.
Okay. As usual, I've been Travis.
I'm Rachel.
Stay active, stay tuned, and stay involved. Adios.
That are driving me insane. This is shame.